This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a hashtag see you in court Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
I'm Glenn Ayers.
Okay, Glenn, as you know, there's another kind of environmental justice, and it happens in courtrooms, as you well know. Meg Sheehan, co-founder of Community Land and Water Coalition, returns to the show as we discuss a recent court victory regarding 80 Makepeace's sand mines on Federal Road in Carver, Mass. She will also talk about legislation like H-918 and H-948 on Beacon Hill as we speak. Okay, it's on to the Enviro Show Echo Chamber. Echo Chamber. We're all wondering if it's just a fluke that a study on forests failing and the climate crisis was conducted by Wake Forest University. Quote, the destruction of the forest is a threat to our entire global ecosystem. The forests in the Amazon and Andes help reduce carbon pollution and are also the home of many diverse plants and animals. Unfortunately, this is not the only news that suggests there are reasons to be concerned about the health of our forests. A UN biodiversity summit declared 38% of the world's trees are at risk of extinction. Another report suggested that trees are losing their natural ability to store carbon because of their disrupted ecosystems, close quote. This is the last thing us in the forest and tree protection community need to hear. The takers, most of them, deny the climate emergency even exists. Well, obviously, use the study isn't yet another reason to clear-cut the planet. How about a drastic reduction of CO2 emissions, guys. Wake up. Hello.
Yeah, well, it's not surprising that forests are failing because we've been failing forests for decades and decades, really for centuries. I come right down to it, but we're doing this intentionally. So there's no surprise.
Nope. Well, I guess this takes us to our conversation with Meg. And we can get into some of that. This sand mining, before they started mining the sand, they ripped off the topsoil. And before they ripped off the topsoil, they clear cut the areas down in one of the rarest sand plains in the eastern U.S., I think. No, Glenn?
Yeah, you know, this reminds me, we've done shows on the sand mining in the past, and today, it's kind of a celebratory show in a way. But we also in the past have done shows about mountaintop removal coal mining. And this is essentially the same kind of strip mining where they blow the tops off of mountains, except it's not in the Appalachians. It's on the coastal plain, you know, on the Atlantic seaboard. But they find the highest hills they can, and they go through a totally farcical process to claim that they're going to create cranberry bogs on the highest possible hills that they can identify. And why do they do that? Well, Meg explains they do it so that they can mine all the sand all the way down to the sea level, basically. And they're not making cranberry bogs. They're selling that sand. And it's big business. And Meg explains all of that. And then she also explains how folks can take action. And I just want to say one thing that, you know, this has been going on for a long time, but it's because of amazing people like Meg that we're finally getting some traction from all of this. And this is a positive story, and I hope folks get inspired by listening to this interview. Today on the Enviro Show, we are joined once again by Meg Sheehan, I should say attorney Meg Sheehan. And Meg is a frequent visitor to the Enviro Show, frequent guest in the past. And recently, we have been focusing on the issue of sand mining in the Pine Barrens of southeastern Massachusetts. And we've talked about that on previous shows. But today, we are really celebrating an amazing victory, legal victory, having to do with this unbelievable travesty that has been occurring without really any kinds of government oversight or regulatory control. And that's the strip mining of huge swaths of the coastal plain in the eastern, southeastern part of Massachusetts. So Meg, I've referred to you in the past as eco goddess. And you really, I'm just saying, we have a lot of activists on the Enviro Show. We've been on the air for 20 years, but I'm going to put you at the very top of the amazing, dedicated activists and organizers. And you've just never given up. You've been an inspiration to me for many, many years. And you really helped me when we were suing the state on logging on state-owned lands. And I read this decision that we're going to be talking about, the legal decision. And I know how much work went into preparing the case and getting this decision. This is an appellate level decision from an appeals court. So it's really serious. And so if you would please introduce yourself and give us an intro, a short intro to this issue and how we got to this point. And then let's talk about this amazing decision that came from just recently, just last week, came from the appeals court in Massachusetts. And then we'll get into the issue of what's next and what folks can do. So Meg, welcome to the Enviro Show.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn. It's really inspiring to talk with you and DO on the show. And thank you for helping us spread the word all these years. So yes, this is an amazing legal victory. Unfortunately, it took us a very long time to get to the decision that we got last Friday from the appeals court. But it is a big step in the right direction. It allows citizens under our state citizen suit law to step into the shoes of the government agencies who are supposed to be enforcing our laws, who often don't, which is why we have grassroots activism and the need for a powerful advocacy base here in Massachusetts. And in this particular case, to enforce one of the laws that is supposed to be regulating sand mining in Massachusetts. Because this issue of so-called earth removal, a quaint term for strip mining, which means stripping off the trees, the topsoil, leveling hills to access lucrative deposits of sand, which many people don't realize, but is the second most extracted resource on Earth by volume, except for water. And around the world, like in Massachusetts, it is often never regulated or poorly regulated. And Massachusetts isn't the only state or province, in the case of Canada, dealing with this, but we have absolutely no state laws to deal with this, no federal laws, and all we are left with is local bylaws. They're called zoning bylaws or general bylaws that are passed by municipalities. And so all of this massive industrial scale strip mining is regulated by local town halls. And ground zero for all of this is the town of Carver, which has large landowners such as A.D. Makepeace, the second largest or the largest private owner landowner in the state, who have these deposits of sand and gravel on their properties. And they can make tens of millions of dollars a year, basically under the table with just a bulldozer and tractor trailer truck, and basically no regulations except a 2-page rubber stamp permit from their friends in Carver Town Hall. So we've been tracking this issue for myself personally over 10 years, but really in earnest over the last 4 years, especially in Carver, and going into the town hall, demanding to see records and permits, attending meetings, filming, exposing what's going on. And we discovered, and as far as this particular case, that AD Makepeace had expired permits for decades, and permits that were issued under false pretenses to do this massive sand to gravel mine. So the area that we're talking about is based in South Carver. It's an environmental justice community, and it's about 2 square miles, globally rare pine barrens, rivers and streams and wetlands, all being strip mined by AD Makepeace. And as far as the Carver Earth Removal Bylaw, the law that the citizens stepped in to enforce, the bylaw essentially prohibits standalone sand and gravel mines. You have to use your land in the way that it's zoned. And in this case, the land is zoned agricultural and residential. So AD Makepeace is limited to using the land for those two purposes. Well, in order to evade the prohibition against standalone sand mines, they claimed that they were building cranberry bogs on these vast parcels of property, and that entitled them or allowed them an opening to exploit local land use protections for legitimate agriculture. So if you were building a farm or clearing some field for a farm, for example, to grow food, you would be entitled to special zoning or land use protections so as not to overregulate or overburden you as a farmer. While this giant landowner, the world's largest cranberry grower, claims that this sand mining is just cranberry agriculture, and therefore they're entitled to these protections, and they should be allowed to do this massive strip mining for decades without building the actual cranberry bogs. So that's what we exposed. We filed a lawsuit in 2022 to enforce the bylaw to shut down the mine and to require an accounting of how much sand and gravel had been extracted under these permits, or in the case of 3 of the areas, without any permits. Makepeace opposed that in the Superior Court. They fought our request for an injunction. They claimed to the judge that we didn't have a case because we didn't meet the criteria of this citizen suit law. And after 3 long years of fighting with different motions and appeals, we finally won a decision from the appeals court that said that, in fact, this Carver Earth Removal Bylaw, this very particular law written to control earth removal and protect the environment in Carver from these irreversible changes in topography, really is one of those laws that the citizens can step in to enforce. This is a major, major victory. There are probably 50 other sand and gravel mines in Carver, some of them active, some of them not. And so this means that we can use this Carver Earth Removal Bylaw to enforce the law against these sand mines.
Well, Meg, this is Glenn, and I did ask you to kind of introduce yourself, which you skipped over that, but I want to go back to that so that folks understand who is really telling this story. And you are an attorney, and you had a career as an attorney working in environmental law. I think you worked in the Attorney General's office maybe for a while. If you could tell us a little bit about that, and then now you're doing all of this work essentially in your retirement. And I mean, that's true activism, right? Because you had a career, and that career, you know, you did a lot of environmental stuff, but now you're taking that skill and turning it into real protection for the environment. And that's an amazing amount of dedication to do this. Like you've said, you've been working on this now for years. And I think the key thing for people to understand is that you're taking these cases, you're writing these lawsuits, arguing these cases yourself in court before the judges. You're doing all of this. Maybe you have help with all of this, but it's pretty amazing. I have also done some legal work, and it is incredibly intimidating to go into court and face adversarial attorneys. You know, I'm sure Make Peace can pay for very expensive, a whole stable of very expensive attorneys. And, you know, to go before the judges and explain that case, you really have to know what you're doing. And I think people need to understand that. If you wouldn't mind setting that part of it up, because there's some real skill required to be able to take these cases through the court system. It is not something that just anyone can do.
Sure, Glenn. So I grew up in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and I always loved the Pine Barrens and being outside in nature. Learned as much as I could as a child, teenager, went to law school eventually to do environmental law. And I was very lucky to get a job at the Attorney General's office doing environmental enforcement in the 1980s. Then I worked at Mass Water Resources Authority cleaning up Boston Harbor. But I was always drawn back to doing pro bono work for watershed groups and even representing Mass Audubon and others. Pro bono, kind of in my free time, helping out groups and individuals that couldn't afford the big, expensive $1,000 an hour lawyers that Makepeace and other companies are able to hire, and to enforce these laws. Our state agencies don't always get around to it. Our towns are often compromised, let's say, and on the side of economic development or the developers. So we formed an organization recently, Community Land and Water Coalition, and we provide pro bono legal services and scientific support to hire experts when we need them, for me to do the pro bono work and cover the court costs and all of that, and to confer with other expert lawyers when we need to. But yes, I've been doing all of this on my own. It is extremely time consuming, but I'm also very fortunate, I feel, to be able to help community members who call me and say that, you know, my house is covered with sand. There's a sand mine next to me. My town hall won't do anything. My board of health won't do anything. Will you please help me? So that's what our group does. And I've been really excited to lead this effort. And we've just gotten an incredibly positive response from the community over the last 5 years as people come to us with all kinds of environmental concerns. And we provide the education and guidance to people to help themselves, or when they need more help, to really walk them through the process or file the case. And it's been really tough. I've been retaliated against for years now. I actually ended up suing some of the companies for defamation because of a campaign that they have against me and had against me, using fake profiles on social media, etc. But things are turning around, and this decision was just a huge victory for everyone, including my clients. In this case, the 10 residents group that I'm representing includes 5 members of the Wampanoag Nation from the 3 tribes in southeastern Mass that have state or federal recognition, the Mashpee, the Aquinna, and the Herring Pond tribe. So it's really been coming together and a lot of work by a lot of people.
Yeah, I just want to also say for folks that the name of this decision is called Troy Currents and Others versus AD Makepeace Company and Others, and it's number 24P-666, which is an ominous number in itself, and are fitting in this case, because you are actually kind of suing the devil, really. However, the irony in that aside, it is a case that was brought under Massachusetts general law, a statute, like you said, the citizen suit provision, which for folks who want to look it up, it's Mass General Law, Chapter 214, Section 7A, which gives any 10 residents of Massachusetts the ability to sue for enforcement of violation of regulations or laws when there's environmental harm or potential environmental harm occurring. And that's the setting for this decision. And you sued originally and you got a bad decision. They turned you down. They told you to go away. And then you appealed to the appeal court and three judges decided, and that's the decision. And we'll link to that on our blog. And it's worth reading because, if you're a legal nerdy kind of person, it's pretty easy for anyone to understand what the judges are saying. They're saying, well, the law requires that there be environmental damage, and strip mining, they consider that environmental damage, by God. And then you have to show that some kind of a law or regulation is being broken that was meant to protect the environment. And the previous judge disagreed, but these appellate judges agreed that, these earth removal bylaws or town ordinances are meant to protect the environment and protect the topography of the land. And then they also said that that is a violation right there, and that these citizens have the right to do this because no one else is actually enforcing these laws. The towns are not doing it. There's no state entity that's doing it. And so these 10 citizens get to actually step in, sort of take the place of the government and enforce or request the court to issue an order or provide injunctive relief and make this damage stop, make the harm to the environment stop. And that's what these judges decided. And it's really worth reading. I wouldn't say it's a potboiler kind of a mystery novel, but the judges, it's very clearly reasoned. They give all the reasons why all of these things are true in this case and why the previous judge made the wrong decision. And now I think what we're looking at is, how does this decision now, because it's an appellate decision, so it should apply to a lot of similar situations. How does this kind of roll out or impact all of these other activities? Because there are dozens and dozens of these sand minings all doing this fake agriculture exemption, so-called cranberry growing farce, or, whatever you want to call it, ruse, and strip mining, making millions of dollars, removing millions of cubic yards of sand for commercial purposes. This isn't for agricultural use. And what they're doing in this region is they're undoing the geologic history. Like, this sand was deposited by the glaciers at the end of the last glacial period, and it's been in place for 12 or 15,000 years, and now it is being trucked away. They're undoing geology, and they're also erasing the native peoples who have lived in this region, again, for thousands of years. And they're just erasing their culture, erasing their heritage, erasing the lands that they lived in and loved for thousands of years before the European invasion. And, that's they don't get into that in this decision, but that's why the tribes, I think, are involved in this action, because their homeland is being desecrated, certainly, and it's all for profit for a greedy few corporations who are exploiting these loopholes in, laws that are meant to help, certainly help farmers, but this isn't farming. This is commercial resource extraction on steroids. I know, because I did my master's research on an active strip mine. I know what it's like. I know how soul-crushing it is to watch an entire area be completely and utterly destroyed and will never be the same again. And that's what they're doing to the Pine Barrens area in southeastern Massachusetts. So how does this decision spill over into the ongoing widespread destruction of that region in Massachusetts?
Thanks, Glenn, for that great explanation. We have a lot more work to do. We have to go back to the Superior Court. and start our prosecuting of the litigation, which involves discovery, which means finding out information from the other side, going back and asking for the injunction again to try to stop it, and then applying these laws to the other ongoing sand mines being disguised as agriculture around Carver and Plymouth and beyond, Middleborough, et cetera. So that's what we need to do, and we need lots of help and support.
Dio, you have a question?
I do, yeah. Meg, I've been wondering, Glenn is talking about the devil in 666. I know that sometimes these people are called the Cranberry Mafia. So I'm wondering about this bogus claim they have that they're creating cranberry bogs. Hasn't the land been so destroyed that it's down to subsoil and you couldn't possibly put in a cranberry bog even if they meant to?
Well, what they do is they find the highest hills that have the most sand, and they say, oh, well, we can't build this 50-acre cranberry bog on top of a hill because we need a flat surface. So first we have to take the hill away. So they chop down the hill and they say, oh, we have to get down to the bare sand. Oh, since we've taken all the topsoil away, now we're going to bring in some topsoil and peat and put in these layers of soil to plant the cranberry vines. And most of the time, they never do it. Or if they do, it's a ruse and they're certainly not making any money off it. And as everyone knows, the cranberry industry has been in the economic doldrums for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our State Department of Agriculture keeps propping them up and even providing grants to some of the worst companies who are doing the strip mining.
So folks that are interested in this issue, you have a great website, the Community Land and Water Coalition.
CommunityLandAndWaterCoalition.org. And you can take action by signing our petition. We have an Action Network petition for moratorium on sand mining. We also have two bills pending in the legislature, House 918 and 948. So contact your state legislator and ask them to support these bills. We had a hearing back in June on those, and they're in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. So especially if you know State Rep. Christine Barber, contact her. She's the decision maker at this point. And volunteer, donate, sign up for our newsletter. And you can email me at meg@communitylandandwater.org.
What were the numbers again? H918, and what was the other?
948. One is for moratorium on sand mining, and a second is for a study of all the impacts from sand dust to loss of indigenous culture and history, and for a review of our laws to figure out what laws could be changed or passed to help us control this scourge.
And Meg, this area, the Pine Barrens, is a globally rare type of ecosystem. And right now, I would expect that the state of Massachusetts would be doing everything that they can to protect this. It's a rare ecosystem. You know, the governor just came out with this thing about protecting biodiversity and all that kind of stuff, which we're in favor of. And yet it doesn't seem like the governor and any of the state agencies are really trying to permanently protect huge areas of the Pine Barrens. And if you look on Google Maps or on Google Earth, you can see these strip mines in the aerial photos. It looks like the area is being chewed by moths, like a sweater that is full of holes, because they're literally ripping the fabric of the Pine Barrens apart. They're chewing it apart and spitting it out. And that whole region is a sole source aquifer. It's the only water supply in that region. And it's been designated that way. It's federally designated as a sole source aquifer. And yet the level of protection needed to protect the water and protect the ecosystem and the biosphere down there, none of that seems like it's getting any attention from state agencies. And maybe that's what we need to be pushing for, through legislation and with the governor especially is, why isn't the governor doing anything? Is it because AD Makepeace donates a lot of money to the Healey campaign? I don't know, but maybe that's the answer, is that some of these politicians might be getting donations, and that's because these companies that are strip mining the soil or the sand, they're making millions and millions of dollars, and why not throw some money around to keep the regulators away from them or keep the legislators in their pocket? And so I think it's going to require a lot of people getting angry because this has been going on for so long and joining together. That's the way we can make a difference, is when we get together, get organized, and support the efforts to bring some sanity back to this kind of insane situation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, hopefully folks that are listening will go to your website, and people that have skills, you could use anybody with any skill, no matter what it is, you can be part of this effort to protect these areas. And actually, if you're a resident in Massachusetts, you could join in one of these lawsuits as one of the members of the 10 citizen group. So I'm going to say there's lots of opportunities for folks to get involved. Can you think of anything else, Meg?
No, I can't. You covered it. And get in touch with us. Again, go to our website. We're on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and we're out there fighting every day. So we send out a newsletter with action steps, like this week, what you can do, hearings, meetings, sign postcards. We really need people to be signing postcards to their legislators so we can mail some to you if you're out in Western Mass and want to get some postcards signed for our legislators, all those things. So get in touch with me at meg@communitylandandwater.org.
Great.
All right. Well, Meg, thanks for being such a strong warrior for protecting the earth and for being so dedicated to this for a long time. And I really encourage folks to read this decision and be inspired by this. This is what a group of people who get organized can accomplish. It does take amazing skills and leadership, but it also requires a lot of other people to support and get involved, because that's what it takes. So Meg, thanks for being on the show, and really want to celebrate this with you. We're out here in the Connecticut River Valley. We rarely travel, but if you're having a big party, let us know and we'll come to the eastern part of the state, and we should have a big celebration on this.
Right.
We really should.
Thanks, Meg.
Thank you both so much. Looking forward to hearing the show.
Okay, we're back.
That was great. You know, it's good to hear that when you're an activist and an organizer and you can join together, like in this case, these 10 citizens, they've accomplished something that it's hard to do by yourself. And they have essentially set up a new regime that can be used to stop this mining, this illegal sand mining that's rampant. And hopefully there'll be a lot of other people that will be signing on to similar lawsuits, because there's about, I'm going to say, hundreds, literally hundreds of these illegal sand mines being operated throughout the eastern part of the state, and they all need to be shut down. So get involved. This is one that we actually could win. It's a rare thing to be able to look at something like this and figure out, what do you have that you can use to stop the destruction? And this is a situation where Meg has figured out a way to really move closer and closer towards shutting down the illegal strip mining of our coastal plain. And we should all be involved and supporting that effort. So check it out and make a difference and do something.
Right. Yeah. And kudos to Meg and everyone in her organization for all the work they put into that. All right. All that's left to say, folks, is listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
Yeah, and this is Glenn Ayers. Take care, folks. Get active and make a difference.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.